All right, so I've been thinking about this a lot, the Sisters of Mercy. Because when most people hear gothic rock, they picture something that just appeared fully formed, all black leather and fog machines. But the actual origin story is so much stranger and more interesting than that.
Right, and it starts in Leeds, West Yorkshire, 1980. Which is not the most glamorous origin story on paper, but that city's industrial character genuinely shaped what the band became. Leeds had this underground scene. Gang of Four, the Makons, and the Sisters emerged right out of that same post-punk ferment.
So who actually started it? Because the lineup shifted around quite a bit early on.
The founding partnership is generally identified as Andrew Eldritch and guitarist Gary Marks. And here's the thing, their original motivation was almost disarmingly simple. They wanted to hear themselves on the radio. That was it. That was the goal.
Which is both very human and also kind of funny given how uncommercial their sound turned out to be.
Exactly. And the name itself came from Leonard Cohen, his song The Sisters of Mercy, which also appeared in Robert Altman's 1971 film McCabe and Mrs. Miller. So even the name carried this weight of melancholy and literary reference from day one.
Now, the key idea for anyone trying to understand their early sound, what were they actually doing differently from other post-punk bands at the time?
The drum machine. That's the answer. The original lineup had a human drummer. But that arrangement dissolved around Easter 1980. When the band regrouped, Eldritch, Marks, and bassist Craig Adams, they replaced the drummer with a machine, and Eldritch named it Dr. Avalanche.
Wait, they named the drum machine?
They named the drum machine, and not just as a joke. The name Dr. Avalanche was kept for every successive replacement machine over the years. So Dr. Avalanche became, in effect, a permanent member of the band. A non-human permanent member. But still.
That means Eldritch could step away from the kit entirely. So how did that change things for him specifically?
It freed him to focus on vocals and production. He took responsibility for the lyrics, the Dr. Avalanche programming, and the record production. Think of it as Eldritch becoming the architect of the entire sonic environment, not just the singer. That low, almost sepulchral vocal register sitting on top of a machine pulse and prominent bass. That combination became their signature.
And that lineup, Eldritch, Marks, Adams, Dr. Avalanche, when did they actually perform together for the first time?
An early performance of that revised lineup is commonly dated to February 16, 1981, at Alcuin College in York. So within about a year of forming, they had the core architecture in place that would define everything that followed.
So what about their first release? Because I know they put something out independently before any label involvement.
Their first single was The Damage Done, backed with Watch and Home of the Hitmen. It came out on their own Merciful Release label. And remember that original goal, getting on the radio. They pressed approximately 1,000 copies specifically to try to make that happen.
1,000 copies? For radio play? Did it work?
Not in any conventional sense, but it established the template, the DIY ethos, the self-run label, the refusal to wait for permission, and The Damage Done is genuinely distinct from their later work. It's rawer, more abrasive. The gothic grandeur they'd later develop wasn't fully there yet.
So the takeaway for anyone coming to the Sisters of Mercy for the first time is that the machine wasn't a gimmick. It was a philosophical choice that restructured the whole band around Eldritch's vision.
That's exactly it. Eldritch and Dr. Avalanche are the two constants across all three studio albums, First and Last and Always in 1985, Floodland in 1987, Vision Thing in 1990. While every other lineup around them changed. The machine outlasted every human collaborator. That tells you everything about how central it was.
Which sets up the next chapter perfectly, because the band was about to expand, sign to a major label, and make the record that most people consider the definitive gothic rock blueprint.
In our next episode, we'll see what happens when Wayne Hussey and Craig Adams are in the picture. WEA Records enters the story, and the band records First and Last and Always. The fog of Leeds was just the beginning.